You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And welcome. You are locked on to the NBA. My name is Nick Engsted, host of the Locked On Mavericks podcast. And joining me, as always, my co-host, contributor to Mavs.com, my co-host of Locked On Mavericks. What you got for me, Isaac Harris?
Is this the most exciting basketball we've seen in how long? I mean, I think you could legitimately make an argument that that fourth quarter was more exciting than anything that happened in the finals. I mean, is that like an exaggeration? Am I just in the moment right now? Because I was on the edge of my couch and I didn't even like care that much who won. I just love the intensity of everything.
It's amazing. This All-Star game, the format change. There's just so many elements that made it work. And what we're going to talk about in this first segment is just the All-Star game. We'll talk to Doug Branson later about the Rising Stars game. We'll talk to Philip Rossman Reich from Locked On Magic about the Aaron Gordon slam dunk contest. We'll talk all about that later in another segment. But for this first segment, Isaac and I are going to talk about the All-Star game and the changes in the format. I'm sure you guys have all seen it by now. You've all read the stories and seen things. But the change in the format to make it basically first to this number wins brought out so many things in these guys. But the key for it, and we both agree on this, is the kids being there. The kids with the different shirts. Like, you literally have the energy from the audience with these kids that you could hear on the broadcast, and I'm sure you could hear even better on the court. You have this energy from these sections of kids that these two teams are representing because of these charities going back and forth, and when one team would score, that section would cheer and back and forth. Like, that, I think, made this. And so if they continue with this format, which they should, that has to be part of it. You have to have the charities. You have to have the kids there.
And they didn't put them in, you know, the upper decks. They didn't put them in a press box. They didn't put them on the mid-level or anything like that. They put them on the court, like in one of the lower bowl sections, and they were into it all game. Like, in, I think the first time I literally heard them chanting was in the third quarter, and you could just hear it. You could feel the energy. The camera would go to them all the time. They were chanting Team LeBron, Team. And
did you hear him say, "Beat LeBron"? Beat LeBron. Yeah. Or maybe they said Team LeBron, but I kept hearing "Beat LeBron." That was awesome. That's like the Beat LA chants that they have all over the place.
That, I think that was the key to everything. Because, you know, yeah, playing for a charity is one thing, but when you're playing for a charity that you can see the people that it's going to, whole different type of ball game. And yeah, it was really the whole second half. It's, you know, it started in the third quarter some. I felt like they were more into the game, but the fourth quarter was just absolutely incredible. And the fact that with the third quarter ending in a tie, it made the fourth quarter even
up
more.
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to split the 100K and, you know, 50-50. I didn't know the exact rule on that if they ended in tie. And it just carried over to the fourth. So it made the fourth quarter that much more exciting.
It was amazing. It was, and it's so great. And you said that it's maybe more exciting than what the finals was because you had all the guys there. I mean, you turn the corner and every single guy is literally an all-star, but every guy's an all-NBA guy. Every guy has been in big moments before. Guys like Luka Doncic couldn't see minutes in the fourth quarter. I mean, this is the number one player and MVP candidate for another team that we both cover and we're biased to, but Nikola Jokic couldn't see any time. Like, Russell Westbrook couldn't see any time in the fourth quarter. Like, it was just crazy to watch all those guys. And the one thing that stuck out to me, besides obviously the intensity, the kids, the charity, all that stuff, was the fouls that were being argued and the fact that if you're a ref in an All-Star game, you go and ref an All-Star game, you're thinking, oh, it's going to be a fun weekend. I get a free trip to Chicago. I'm going to, you know, hang out and probably go to some, you know, some NBA events and have fun, get to walk around and basically talk to all these All-Star guys mid-game because they're all just going to joke around. And then all of a sudden, this game turns competitive, like just like that. And all of a sudden, you have LeBron, Chris Paul, James Harden, and Anthony Davis all in your face after every call. And Kyle Lowry on the other side, and Giannis. Like, just every single big name player that argues every single call is right there in your face. And I just thought that was one of the biggest indicators that this has actually worked, right? It was sucks for the refs, but it was a great indicator that this worked.
Well, after the game, I was just scrolling on Twitter like a lot of you, and I was like, man, there's not much in the world that unites NBA Twitter like this All-Star format is right now. I mean, everybody loved this format.
Fergie being awful at the national anthem was the last thing, I think, last year.
Shaka Khan.
Oof. Falling in the footsteps.
Falling in the footsteps. Like, yeah, let's keep this thing going. But no, and I was thinking about that, and then I immediately thought, is there anybody zagging right now? Like, you know, like, is there anybody that really
who's got
hates
the anti-take
this? Like,
today?
Yeah, who has that? And you know who it is? It's the refs. They're pissed right now, okay? Because they thought this was going to be a cakewalk, and all of a sudden, the second half in this fourth quarter, they actually, like, they had to hear arguments, they had to be complained to, and they had to get into the game a lot. So I think that's the only demographic right now is the referees that didn't like the end of this game.
Yeah, that's probably the only one. What do we think about the ending lineups? Because that's kind of one of these big things that, you know, we talk about. Like, can, when we see all the great guys on the floor at once, who are the guys that LeBron, like Team LeBron and Frank Vogel trust, and then Nick Nurse and, you know, Team Giannis, who do they trust? And it came down to, for Team LeBron, it was LeBron, Kawhi, Anthony Davis, James Harden, and then Chris Paul, one of the best clutch players in the NBA. And for Team Giannis, it ended up being Embiid, Giannis, Siakam, Kemba, and then Kyle Lowry, a champion that's been out there. And obviously, you understand it from Nick Nurse's perspective, right? Like, he just won a championship with this guy. That's one of his guys. He went out with the Raptors. But what did you think about Team LeBron, you know, going with Chris Paul instead of Luka? And all biases, you know, out on the table, because we are the hosts of Locked On Mavericks.
For sure. And I didn't mind it at all. And it's kind of twofold. One, Chris Paul was having a really good game. He was shooting the lights out from the ball. You know, he shot 63% from three-point line in this game. But two, I think it was kind of like an honor thing of, I mean, this is probably Chris Paul's last All-Star game, right? I mean,
yeah, don't say that to his face, though.
No, but I'm saying, like, I understood, you know, that fourth quarter, you know, I think that was more of, hey, this could be Chris's last All-Star game. He's one of the greatest point guards that's played the game. Luke is going to be here for the next, what, 10, 15 years in this game. So I actually understood that a lot. And Kyle Lowry on the other side for Trae Young at the end of the game, you didn't need another guy who's going to chuck it from 30 feet. You need a guy to draw the charges like he did. Like, you needed a guy basketball-wise that was bringing what Kyle Lowry's bringing. So I actually like both of those moves, and that's with me covering Luka every day.
There's just another level that some of these veteran players can get to mentally, I think. Just knowing what to do, knowing, you know, where to be and how to play off of guys, and, you know, how to respond in big moments. And you trust those guys that have been there. I mean, all those guys of multi-time All-Stars have been in huge moments. They've all been in big playoff games, except for maybe Anthony Davis. But
he got close.
He won one series. He won one series, but
that's true. Well, those free throws at the end had me worried a little bit. Like,
when he missed
bro,
the first one, I got
out
of my chair.
Hometown,
so AD in his hometown. Like, you cannot miss in your hometown in front of those kids. Oh man, that would have been wild. Let's talk about Kyle Lowry and the Charges, though.
I'm all here for it. I'm down.
Do we want it to work that well, though? The new format change worked, but do we want it to work so well that we're flopping?
I love it.
And we're oh, and it had to happen against James Harden, too. That really late one on the three-point shot that should have won the game. Kyle Lowry flops, and they call it really late, and it the shot is waved off. Are we there? Are we here for it?
You saw a flop. I saw Harden lower the shoulder, and that was the offensive foul.
Can he lower his shoulders?
I don't know if he did. But I will just say I'm all for it. I just loved every bit of the intensity in the game. I love that Kyle Lowry is trying to draw a charge on Kawhi and LeBron and those guys. I love the intensity
pulling
that
Anthony
Giannis,
Davis under the basket.
That was my only gripe at the end. I don't know how you can even fix that, but I hated that it ended on a free throw. I know that's just whatever.
I saw a fix from a couple people. It's take away team fouls. So you don't accumulate team fouls. You just get the ball back. And so it wouldn't be five team fouls and then you get free throws on a non-shooting. Like, so that, like Kyle Lowry pulling Anthony Davis' arm under the basket, that's a non-shooting foul. And so you don't get free throws from that. That's the tweak that I think that they should change. Because
what if
then,
you just take it out on any foul, shooting foul or not, just so it doesn't end on the free throw?
Or just there's no free throws, which is totally fine. Like, the one thing about free throws is it gives the guys a little break, but, I mean, it's All-Star Day. That's probably the one change we'd make, right?
I think that, yeah, really. I mean, that I think, you know, first three quarters, you know, it's kind of weird. The whole, like, you know, first quarter, the scoreboard, I think the graphics on it was kind of weird for me. How much they crammed into the graphic at the bottom right during the fourth quarter.
The score bug was so full.
It was wild, but my wife walked in the second quarter and she's like, this game's been on for a while. Why is it 8-8? I'm like, well, let's sit down for 20 minutes. Yeah, let's talk about it. But no, I think it all worked. The kids being there was amazing. The basketball in the fourth quarter was some of the most competitive, intense basketball that we've all wanted, that the league's wanted for so long. And they achieved it. They hit it perfectly of what you want in this All-Star game. I think opposing GMs might be a little, or not opposing, but any GM across the league was kind of, you know, with the player in that fourth quarter is on the edge of their seat a little bit. There was a couple falls there from Embiid and Giannis, and some of these guys are like,
Ben Simmons looked like he almost twisted it, like broke his ankle on that one fall when he fall flat on his back.
Something that I always enjoy at the end of these, All-Star games is, where does the ball go? Like that, when you're the best of the best 10 players on the court, figuratively, you know, I can't wait to see KD, Steph Curry, Dame, Kyrie. I want to see these guys in this format. I want to see the actual, you know, when those guys are out there, that's going to make it even better. But I just like seeing where some of these guys, I like seeing that in this format, sometimes for Giannis's team, it was getting the ball to Joel Embiid. And whoever wants to take their shots at Embiid, it was 10 best players on the court, and it was getting the ball to Embiid in the post. And, you know, doing the Hakeem, you know, fadeaway on LeBron was nasty. You know, just seeing, I think it's not to try to read too much into it, but I think it is a little bit telling of that Giannis wasn't just taken over there at the end of the game. And what does that look like when it comes playoff time of, hey, like if he's, so I like seeing when it's competitive, where the ball goes at the end of these fourth quarters in the All-Star game.
Yeah. So All-Star game, we're in on it. We love it. We love the format change coming up. Let's get into the Rising Stars Challenge with Doug Branson from Locked On Hornets. And then we'll talk about the slam dunk contest. Aaron Gordon robbed again. We'll talk about that with Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic. Guys, stick with us here on Locked On NBA. And welcome in the host of the Locked On Hornets podcast, Doug Branson, the co-host, one of them. There's a bunch of you guys over there. A team that occupied maybe a fourth of all the players on Team USA, the Hornets had three guys. How did you think your Hornets showed up in this game?
Yeah, I think they really filled out the rising part of the Rising Stars Challenge. Yeah, I mean, it's clearly, you know, Zion Williamson, Trae Young, Ja Morant, those are the stars. But then you had Miles Bridges, Devontae Graham, and PJ Washington, the rising part. And really, it was the bench that sort of stepped up for Team USA and got them out of their funk and eventually won the game. And Miles with the MVP. I mean, it's impressive. Miles has went into that Rising Stars game with a little bit of regular season momentum and a little bit of confidence. And it's nice to see him take that and maybe take the third quarter a little more seriously than everyone else and put on a show.
It's pretty cool to have three starters in the Rising Stars game, right? Like you said that they are the rising part of the stars, but it's pretty cool to have a young core that's playing like meaningful minutes on your team, however you want to define meaningful for the Hornets right now. But they're playing meaningful minutes for your team right now.
Yeah, I think so, especially. I mean, if you look at the past draft misses that have been a staple of this Hornets franchise.
One of them is on our team right now, Michael Carter-Williams.
That's right. Well, yeah, exactly. And that was a player that they brought into the organization that was a draft miss elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, this is it's been rough in the draft for the past, I'd say, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years for the Charlotte Hornets. So it's nice to see not only first round lottery picks play well for the Hornets, but also you've got second round picks and Devontae Graham playing well as well.
So Miles Bridges gets the MVP. Of those three guys, though, is he the MVP of that group for you for the Hornets going forward, or which one of those guys do you think is the next like potential star?
No, I think that right now is Devontae Graham, and he's slipped a little bit. The sheen has worn off of his three-point shot as defense has started to adjust and force him to take more two-point shots. He wasn't very effective at that at first, but it seems like in the past 10 games or so, he's really figured out that touch on his floater, and his ability to get inside and finish has improved as well. So I think he's going to eventually put all that together and be a future star for this Hornets team. And his three-point shot, I think, will return as well as defenses have to adjust to multiple levels of scoring from Devontae Graham. Miles Bridges, again, I think he struggled at the beginning of this season as he was put into a starting role for the first time. And then there was this surprise in PJ Washington, the rookie, that all of a sudden forced his way into a starting role. I mean, they had no choice but to start PJ because of how well he had played in the preseason. And so I think that was an issue for Miles at first, like adjusting to how well PJ was playing. And they played similar styles almost. And I think that hurt Miles in a certain way. But he has gained confidence. PJ was hurt for a little while. It allowed Miles Bridges to really find his role on this team, and he's continued that even though PJ Washington back in the rotation.
The main story, I think, from this game, besides maybe the dunk contest that broke out at the end of the Rising Stars game, was Ja Morant and Zion Williamson. I mean, those guys just going back and forth. They had the rapport already built up from high school. I think the announcers may have said that 12 or 15 times that they played together on AAU in high school. But Ja Morant and Zion Williamson throwing lobs to each other was so much fun in this game. There's highlights all over the Locked On NBA Net Twitter and Instagram, so you can go check those out. Doug, what did you think about Ja Morant throwing lobs to Zion? It just makes this game so much fun.
Well, look, man, I don't know if all of this player movement and player independence is good for the league, the health of the league, but I want to see Ja Morant and Zion Williamson on the same team at some point in their career. Like, these guys just feel destined to play together at some point. I don't know if it's for the Grizzlies. I don't know if it's for the Pelicans. I don't know if it's for some team out in LA at some point. But I would just love to see these two together.
Oh, wait, what?
Oh man, don't do that. Don't do that. I care about you.
Sorry,
Nick.
Sorry.
Don't
Knicks
do
fans.
That to yourself. Sorry. But I mean, that's fantastic. And by the way, Zion, you knew you broke the rim. I saw he said he didn't know that his dunk was. Don't. Why do these players lie? Why do they get to the All-Star game and they lie? And it's crazy. And Zion, you of course.
Zion
you
seems
you
one of the most like contrite, like honest, like humble humans, right? Anytime you interview him or anytime he's talked on a podcast like JJ Redick's podcast or wherever, he just seems such like a down-to-earth, contrite person. And to lie about the rim, maybe he just being that big, maybe you just don't feel it, right? Like, guys sometimes don't realize they're so big, and it's like a big dog, right? Big dogs don't realize they're big dogs, and they'll jump in your lap, and like they're like, you're not a small dog, you can't just jump in my lap. Maybe he just doesn't realize how strong he really is.
I saw that backboard, Nick, and it bothered me so much because it reminded me of my computer monitor. You know when your computer monitor is just like slightly tilted, and then you try to tilt it back to the other way, and it gets like that. Just those kind of things bother me. I was like, somebody please fix this backboard.
Yeah, Zion Williamson dunking, and then the actual huge stanchion actually just moving and tilting the backboard. That was wild. The other big story, I guess, from this game was Luka's half court shot right before halftime. The gift that just keeps on giving is Luka and Trae Young watching it fly in the air, and then them looking at each other, and just Trae Young and Luka just laughing and smiling. And you know, Isaac Harris, my co-host on Locked On Mavericks, had the best caption. With the second pick in the 2018 draft, the Sacramento Kings select Marvin Bagley, and it's just Luka and Trae Young laughing it off. But the story behind that is that Trae Young looked at Luka and say, "Don't pass it, pull up from there." And Luka just pulled up from right there, hit the half court shot. It banked in, of course. It was one of the most fun moments of the Rising Stars game for me and probably a lot of other people.
Well, you hit on the key word there, Nick, fun. Like, it was a fun Rising Stars game because you had players that were having fun. They were enjoying themselves, smiling, challenging one another. And I think, look, it's clear from that Rising Stars game that the NBA is going to be fine in terms of talent. But I just love that these players were having a good time. Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, Luka Doncic, Miles Bridges. It's clear that these players love playing the game, and they're all looking to dominate it in a certain way. And that's the thing that stands out to me about Luka. And I don't know if he does this in regular season games, but he was out there dominating players and smiling the entire time. And I'm pretty sure I've seen him do it in a regular season game. That's that is dominance. It's not just beating your opponent down. It's beating them down with a smile on your face. That's what separates Luka to me. That's what puts him in a different tier, I think, and will continue to put him in a different tier. MJ could do that. Michael Jordan could beat you down, talk trash to you, and then smile and shrug. And that's what Luka has. Luka has the different thing.
There's a really good gif that I tweeted out on my account at Nick Van Exit of Luka driving on Jaren Jackson Jr. And he just has this smile on his face the entire time, like open mouth smile as he drives right past him. And Jaren Jackson Jr. wasn't playing that great a defense. I mean, it's the Rising Stars game, but that's exactly what you're talking about, is that these guys just love playing and can put a smile on their face and just own the person in front of them. I think up to that point too, these guys all know each other. Like, these guys have all played together. They've all been around each other in rookie symposiums and in other things before. And for whatever that's doing for the competition of the NBA, for weekends like this, it makes the NBA feel more like a family and feel more together. And I think that's a positive thing overall. Just the vibe of guys, you know, pulling for each other. We saw the dunk contest, people reaching out and, you know, tweeting and all this stuff. I think that's just a positive overall for the NBA.
And I think, too, you know, the Rising Stars game, this was a very fun game, and it was because there was so much talent. They were all having fun together. And that doesn't necessarily translate into the NBA All-Star game, and that's part of the reason I think you've seen all of these rule changes to bring some excitement to the game, but I think also to bring some excitement to the players. Because in years past, in the actual NBA All-Star game, it didn't feel like they were having a good time. It wasn't entertaining in that way. It felt almost, to me at least, like they were going through the motions, like this was something that they all had to do. They were both simultaneously not being competitive and also not being fun. I don't know how you managed to do both of those things, but I think this Rising Stars game gives you a glimpse at what the NBA All-Star game could be, even if they played a regular basketball game, if everyone didn't take it so darn seriously or not seriously enough somehow simultaneously.
Yeah, got to find a little bit in the middle. And then the dunk contest that broke out at the end, just a bunch of missed dunks. I mean, we got to see maybe potential for Zion and you know, some of his dunk contest ideas. But I thought that was pretty cool at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to, and hopefully for the sake of the dunk contest, that was an actual preview, Nick, that we do get some of these players, though. They got to figure this judging thing out. I know I wasn't brought on to talk about the dunk contest, but they're never going to get these big stars, Zion, Ja, Trey. None of these guys are going to put themselves out there to be embarrassed like Aaron Gordon was. So if the NBA, I mean, I know this is kind of, it's a fun thing, right? It's a dunk contest. It's not really that serious. But if you want to keep doing it, then you got to figure out a way to do it right.
Exactly. We'll talk to, we're actually talking to Philip Rossman Reich about that and his own Aaron Gordon that got robbed. So we'll talk to him about that. Doug, appreciate you coming on. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find us on the Locked On Hornets podcast. Myself, Walker Mail, who is the host of the Wake Up Call on ESPN Charlotte. We do it every day.
There you go. Follow them there. Doug, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And now welcome in to Locked On NBA, the host of a Locked On Magic podcast, Philip Rossman Reich. Philip, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Still catching my breath after the All-Star game there.
Yeah, the All-Star game was incredible. The new format was great. But we're here to talk about the dunk contest because your guy, Aaron Gordon, robbed again. What is up with Aaron Gordon in dunk contests?
I don't know, man. Maybe it's because he's on the Magic and the Magic are such a kind of low profile team, but for whatever reason, just the judges just don't like Aaron Gordon or they don't like him enough or he's just in the wrong spot. I don't know what it is. The people spoke. It was very clear leaving that arena or just feeling the energy of that arena through the TV screen that Aaron Gordon had the crowd in the palm of his hands. And apparently that doesn't matter. So, you know, Commodus is gonna decide to kill Maximus. So there you go.
Man, Aaron Gordon, 5 50-point dunks in a row. He averaged 49.5 for his 8 dunks that he did. Or how many did he do? He did
6.
Yeah, he's 6 total dunks.
And the one that he did not score 50 on is probably the dunk we're gonna remember most from the contest when he scaled Taco Fall.
Yeah. So Aaron Gordon goes up against Derrick Jones Jr. In the first round, we'll skip past that. The only weird thing in the first round was Dwight Howard's 49 with that weird dunk with the Kobe.
The Kobe tribute slash Superman.
He got a couple points for the tribute, I think.
Which Magic fans certainly appreciated because Jameer Nelson came out of the woodworks to throw him the lob and put the Superman cape on. So Magic fans were definitely okay with the 49 there.
Yeah, where did Jameer Nelson come from? I mean, quite literally, and then in the actual, he threw it from in the crowd, it felt like.
Yes.
And then
the original is better, though. Let's make that perfectly clear.
Yeah. That's a duo you guys probably missed, too. And then we go to the final round. It's Aaron Gordon versus Derrick Jones Jr. First two dunks, Aaron Gordon. He goes over Chance the Rapper and reaches back. I mean, this was quite the dunk where he just reaches back behind him and two-hand dunks it. And then he throws the off-the-backboard 360 windmill from Markelle Fultz.
One-handed 360 windmill, it should be noted.
that was maybe my favorite dunk of the night. It was creative. It was using different elements. I just thought that was a great dunk. Derrick Jones Jr. jumps over two guys, goes between the legs, and then jumps over one guy off the backboard between the legs. I don't know if Derrick Jones Jr. dunked at all without putting the ball between his legs in this contest.
Yeah, I mean, and it's unfortunately for Aaron Gordon fans, it felt very similar to what Zach LaVine did. Again, I want to make this perfectly clear before we go anywhere. Derrick Jones Jr. is a heck of a dunker. I always thought it was going to be those two guys, and almost every other year, Derrick Jones Jr. wins the dunk contest because he is an incredible leaper, and he showed that. And the dunks that he had were amazing, fantastic dunks. So I want to make that clear. This is not an anti-Derrick Jones Jr. thing. But Aaron Gordon he had the I feel like in a dunk contest, how the crowd reacts, how the crowd pops to your reaction, how the other NBA All-Stars sitting on the bench react to what you're doing, that should matter. And just like against Zach LaVine, who very similarly did a lot of stuff, jumping from the three free throw line, just a lot of kind of long jumps. And again, Zach LaVine, incredible in 2016 as well. But did he really do any variation of things? Did he really kind of change things up? I mean, yes, Aaron Gordon did a lot of jumping over Chance the Rapper and grabbing the ball from his hand. But he did something different with each dunk and did something kind of new and unique or some new test of agility that I think was really fascinating to watch. It just every single thing was just like, how does the human body do that in time before they land? It's just frustrating because you could definitely tell that Aaron puts the creative juices into these things and does something that we've never seen in a dunk contest. And he just keeps getting beat by guys that are doing different variations of seemingly the same dunk.
Yeah, that's where I think the frustration comes from. And then we'll talk about the conspiracy with Dwayne Wade a little bit later. We'll talk about that. But so that's the final round. And then they end up tying. They get all 50s in the final round, which is awesome. They go to a dunk off, which this was kind of the weird thing for Aaron Gordon is that he said he only had how many dunks prepared before he came into this dunk contest.
So he said that, they're told to prepare four dunks. After what happened in 2016, I can't imagine that Gordon didn't have a fifth dunk planned. I think he said back in 2016 that he didn't expect to have another dunk and was a little gassed and didn't know really what to do. And I have to imagine that fifth dunk, he had an idea of what he was going to do. Maybe he didn't practice it as intensely, but I think he had an idea. That sixth dunk, the final dunk, he was just looking for ideas and just literally dragged Taco Fall onto the floor to dunk over him.
He got pressured into doing it almost.
hey, Orlando guys got each other's back. Aaron wasn't going to leave Taco out there hanging.
Yeah, and Taco, he went to UCF, right? That's right.
Yeah, he went to UCF. He's a proud adopted son of Orlando.
And the joke going around Twitter was that Taco went to UCF. He should just declare Aaron Gordon the champion, right? That's what the UCF
went. So they go. That's what we do down here.
They go to the dunk off, and Aaron Gordon goes over Chance the Rapper between the legs. He goes over Taco, gets the 47 on the over Taco. Derrick Jones Jr. does off the side of the backboard between the legs and then the almost free throw line windmill dunk. What was your take on the Taco Fall dunk? Because some people were saying, well, he didn't really clear him. It didn't really count. What was your take on that?
I mean, when you look at all these guys, I mean, even what Derrick Jones Jr. did dunking over people, like he pushed off on Bam Adebayo on one of the early dunks. And then he did kind of the displayed leg to avoid hitting the guy's thing too. So if the criteria is he needed to clear them, the precedent was already set that you don't actually have to like Vince Carter jump over them. you don't have to Frederick Weiss them. To even get as high as Aaron did, get to the rim, and he hung on that rim. Like he embellished it. He did all the window dressing that you want to see from it over a guy who's 7'6". Like that's kind of what you almost see in a game if you're trying to dunk over a guy like that. It was still an impressive feat. I don't really buy that argument. The question to me is, maybe if you want to break down the technical aspects of it, then yeah, he didn't clear him, but I feel like a dunk contest is so much more about the emotion and how you feel in the building and how you react to the moment. And, you know, that's why, like, the Pat Connaughton dunk where he hit the backboard first and then dunked it, that's a really impressive hard dunk, but people didn't see it or realize what they saw until the replay. You know, I think Gordon had an issue with that in 2016 when he did he put the ball between his legs and then back over his head for a dunk. It happened so fast, nobody really understood what they were seeing.
That was the one where stuff was spinning, right? He was on like
No. So the last dunk in his dunk off with Zach LaVine, it looks like a relatively simple dunk, but he jumped up, put the ball, you know, lowered the ball between his legs he went over his head between his legs and then reversed it. And it happened so fast, like live, you didn't really, there was no buzz. You didn't know what happened. But then they showed it on the replay and it was just like, oh my God, like he did that. And a dunk contest is so much about raw emotion and you got to be able to show as much as perform the dunk.
Yeah. And there is something about the energy too, where guys are just hitting dunk after dunk and they're not, you know, they're not missing their dunks. There's just an energy with a dunk contest that travels from, you know, dunk to dunk. And then it kind of goes to the judges too, because once you start giving out 50s, it's, you know, it's like candy at that point, right? You're just throwing it out. And so the conspiracy comes, you know, at the very end, Common told Ramona Shelburne that everyone had agreed at the very last dunk in the dunk off that they were going to both, you know, rank both the dunks of 48 or rank both of them the same thing. And, Derrick Jones Jr. goes, he gets a 48. Then Aaron Gordon goes over Taco, and the score is about to come up. And everyone looks over at Dwayne Wade when the score, you know, pops up. He was the one that gave him a 9, and two others gave him a 9. But it seemed like they had coordinated something. And then Dwayne Wade, who, of course, Miami guy, Derrick Jones Jr., Miami guy, decides to give, you know, Aaron Gordon the 9 instead of the 10 like he maybe was supposed to, like they were coordinating. Do you buy into the conspiracy?
I want to not believe in it, but before we get into that, I want to just note the shock that, I mean, you talk about like pops and crowd reaction. There was audible shock when that score came up. Like people were like, what just happened? What is going on? So it definitely feeds into this belief that there was some conspiracy. I don't want to completely absolve Chadwick Boseman and Scottie Pippen, because if there were some grand conspiracy, you know, wouldn't Dwayne Wade volunteer and say, hey, I'll give him a 9. You know, DJ's my guy. I'm not going to go against him. I'm not going to be one of the people that gives him a 10. Common or Scottie, one of you guys give him a 10. It's not going to be me. So I find it really hard to believe if there was something coordinated that they would leave it to Dwayne Wade to make that choice. You know,
maybe they didn't. Maybe he agreed.
Maybe they didn't. I mean, but everyone certainly seemed to look at him and you know, the Zapruder film is out now that Wade was already taking his headset off at that point. I don't think that that's the case. I think something very similar to what happened at the end of that 2016 contest happened. They knew they were getting the rap signal, you know, like we got to get off the air. You know, these guys don't have any more dunks. It just felt like they just wanted to end it. And unfortunately that's very dissatisfying for the fans. But it just felt like Aaron went last again, just like he did in 2016. And that meant he got the short end of the stick.
There you go. Philip Rossman-Reich, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me, of course, on Locked On Magic and follow me on Twitter @PhilipRR_OMD.
There you go, guys. Thanks so much for listening to Locked On NBA.